Pat Buchanan is with us now. I know he's not surprised about this at all. Leave it to the U.S. media complex to criticize a president for actually being engaged and going to the region and offering support as Texas is in for years of, frankly, struggle after this flood. And Buchanan joins us now. Pat, great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Laura.
So what do you...
They don't seem to like the president's performance.
Oh, we're just getting along to realizing that.
They loathe the man, and they simply are not going to find any reason to say something nice about him. So what they say is, in effect, we would have shown more compassion had it been us. We would have shown more warmth and caring. And he's a soulless creature.
The guy
flew to Texas, and he did what I'm sure the authorities said, don't get in the middle of this and bring the whole, you know, kit and caboodle from Air Force One. And I thought he did very well. He was spirited, uplifting. Texas is going to be able to handle this. I mean, he was fine. The president was fine from everything I saw, and the people were delighted with him. But we got the bah humbug crowd.
I would love to be in the CNN, you know, production meeting in the morning and say, okay, this is how we're going to handle the flood. You're going to go in these boats and Trump's coming. Who's going to be on the Trump detail? Okay. When he comes, look at Melania's shoes. Make sure you check out what she's wearing because I bet that's going to be inappropriate. He probably won't hug enough people and he probably won't emote like President Obama did or even President Bush did. He probably won't start crying. That's not Trump. Not going to cry. But he's gonna get it done, which is what he's doing. Even the Democrat local officials are saying he's getting it done. So
they show no empathy for our president.
Yeah, there's a compassion deficit on the other side, Pat.
It is almost laughable to listen to him. It really is.
No,
the whining and the moaning. And the president of the United States went to Texas. He made two stops down there. The folks loved him. He's cheering them up. We're going to make this. We're going to do it together. And you're doing a great job down here. And he comes home. And gets pounded.
No, well, I think so many people are tuning the American media out at this point. I did predict, Pat, yesterday that there would be a call for immediate amnesty for all illegal immigrants who were, you know, in the flood. And like clockwork on the front page of the New York Times, here's the title of the piece: An Uneasy Time for Immigrants, comma, and then the rain began to fall. Bad writing. This is bad writing at the New York Times.
Well, they're very predictable. I will say that there's no doubt with the war between Trump and the media has really awarded a death here. And there's no doubt that I think the American media, the U.S. press corps and everything, have really suffered what I would consider permanent damage. You know, we had our own battles with them in the Reagan years, even more so in the Nixon years, that were sort of on and off battles. But this war to the death that's taken place, I think, is going to leave the press permanently damaged. But let me tell you, I've watched a number of shows these days. Look, they are, the whole thing is they're all waiting. They're all waiting for Trump to fall or mm-hmm. Trump to be deposed. And then and they want him put into jail, some of them. It's almost visible.
Yeah, they're waiting for impeachment, but they're hoping he's pushed to resign because, you know, some lawyer for Trump was pushing for the hotel deal in Moscow. I mean, there's always a little drip. When things start going well for Trump, there's always a story that then is leaked out or comes out. Well, but his company was pursuing a deal in Moscow during the campaign. And, you know, there's never going to be a period of time where there's some lull. There's always going to be the things are going well for Trump and the economy. None of them are complaining about the economy, by the way. Do you notice that? So the economy's going well, disaster relief going well. So, oh, it's the Moscow hotel. Okay, Mueller's right on the, you know, cusp
well,
of
you know,
an indictment.
I think there's a general realization that there was, I mean, Trump and his people had no role in the hacking, which was supposedly the issue under investigation by the Russians. And now they're moving into all this other stuff, into Manafort and all the other folks, and they're going to try to catch these financial, you know, financial missteps, or Trump saying something that, as they're putting it, you know, this is obstruction of justice or something like that. He's obstructing, apparently, an investigation into a crime that wasn't committed. So you've got to, but this is where they're going. They're mm-hmm. It is a fetish with them. They will not let it go. And, you know, they keep working on it, and they've got an awful lot of people lined up on it, and they keep dropping these things. So you don't know where it all ends.
No, you don't. And the question I think that is important for the substance of the Trump agenda, which is trade, immigration, getting tax relief through, getting good judges on the court. This requires a willing Congress, Pat. This requires an proactive, forward-thinking congressional leadership that I think thus far we have not seen. And the foot dragging on confirmations, the allowing Chuck Schumer to tie him up in knots. I mean, I think the people have to call them out on this. And you know, obviously, Donald Trump has to use the power of the bully pulpit to encourage both parties to get the job done for the American people. But I think a lot of this blame lays squarely on the shoulders of the Republicans.
Well, no question about it. The Republicans promised various things. First and foremost, they're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. And they failed to do it, despite the fact they got both houses of Congress. Now, I understand why Mitch failed. John McCain, who's a great media hero and who was praised by the media for what he did, he went south on Mitch and provided the single vote that prevented the whole bill from moving forward. And what is Mitch supposed to do there? But I will say, look, if they come up at the end of the year and they've got no tax reform and they got no repeal replacement of Obamacare and they got no infrastructure bill and all these other things, people are going to say, why did we elect a Republican Congress? And if they can't do any better than this, what's the sense of putting them back in? So I think that the weight is really on there. But I tell you where I don't agree. I don't know that it's wise for the president to hammer Mitch. They ought to get together in a room and just say, look, we've all got it on the line here, and we all agree on judges and just what you mentioned. We have an agenda that we're all signed up on. Now let's get together and get it done. If we have to put the Congress in session, you know, every day of the week.
Well, I think that's a great point. And he's not going to ever do wrong by reaching out to GOP leadership on the issues he ran on. He's not going to get everything he wants. You never do. But I mean, it's in both of their interests and the interest of the country to get something done.
I don't understand, first off, it's also true that, I mean, when is Congress coming back? Sometime in October.
Oh, don't you love that?
Five weeks vacation? I've never had something like that in my life, when I'm unemployed.
Pat, I can honestly say the only time I ever had any extended period of time off was after all of my schooling and after all of the, law school and da-da. I had like 2 months before I went to work at a law firm in D.C. But that's only because the most amount of time I think I ever had off, like when I was working, was maybe 4 days, 5 days. That's just not, we don't have time. When you're getting going, you have to work.
Yeah, when I got out of graduate school, I came back to D.C. from New York in journalism school in New York and came home for the weekend and got on a train to St. Louis.
That's right. You were right back in the thick. You were right in the thick of things.
My first look at middle America was not impressive.
I think, again, it does. When we have a huge natural disaster like this, we have the North Korea missile flying. Congress should just haul itself back into town, don't you think? I mean, they should go Labor Day.
I sure do. I mean,
get back.
Come back and show you're serious. You're working day and night.
Right.
You've really got your nose to the grindstone. And instead of these, the Tuesday to Thursday and all the rest of it and the vacations.
Don't you love
things,
that?
I mean, everything's on the line. The American people and especially the group, the conservatives and moderates and everybody, populists that put these folks into power and gave them all this power, had really high hopes in January. And if those hopes aren't realized because they couldn't get it all together or they've taken too many days off, there's going to be tremendous bitterness and disillusionment. And why would you let that happen? When you've been given the franchise, given the football, as it were, move it down the field.
No, it's such a gift that they have right now to have the majority and both houses in the presidency. What a blessing! What a gift! What an opportunity!
And they got all these state legislatures and all these governors and in the country. Really, you know, even though Obama was immensely, I mean, for a president, kept maintained his popularity. Beneath Obama, the Democratic, what, they lose 1,000 state legislative seats, and they both houses of Congress gone, and Republican governorships as high as they've been since the grand old days of Warren Harding and Calvin Coolidge.
You know, my great-grandfather worked for Calvin Coolidge. Isn't that fun? Isn't that fun? He worked for him. He worked for him.
Calvin Cowell was terrific.
Yeah, he worked for him in Boston.
About the woman sitting next to him at dinner and said, "Someone told me, Mr. President, that I couldn't get you to say more than two words." And he turned to her and said, "You lose."
Oh, my gosh. That's hilarious.
He was a great figure.
Oh, well,
Ronald Reagan, right there in the Oval Office. Oval Office or Cabinet Room, one of the two. He had the picture of right there.
Yeah, Silent Cal. Don't get us into a bunch of wars. Take care of business at home. He's a man of few words, and that's fine. We don't need to have a man blabbing on and on. And just let's look at the results. I think that's the perfect way to look at it.
Federal government under Coolidge, I believe, spent 3% of GDP.
Wow.
Feds are now up at about 20-21.
Oh, my God. No,
and the state and local together are another 20%. You're up to 40%. French are at 57%. Our friend Macron's having a little difficulty, apparently.
But isn't he a cutie pie? I mean, isn't that what's most important? You know,
him and Trudeau.
Yeah, him and Trudeau. They should
unbelievable
just start their own.
Like
yeah, they should. They should just have their own calendars and own pin up boys. What month would Angela Merkel be in that calendar? That's my question.
I think it's December.
Oh, it gets cold. Very cold. Pat, thanks for joining us. You never know where this conversation is going to go with Buchanan. I love it. We'll take a break. Don't go away.
The Laura Ingraham Show.